You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Here we go.
Over the middle, caught by Hollywood Brown. See you later, Hollywood, to the house.
Jackson, the spin and toss. Ingram makes a man miss. Diving. Touchdown. What an effort.
Russell Wilson's first pass to Metcalf. And Metcalf had it, lost it, and is picked up by the Ravens. And running in is Marlon Humphrey for the touchdown.
There's a second down and three. Jackson tips it himself. Look at him turn back and forth. Oh, he broke his ankles. Now he's got an entourage, and he's got a touchdown. He is Houdini. What a play. 47-yard touchdown run by the magical quarterback, Lamar Jackson.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Like a Raven. This is our last episode where we have actual football to talk about for many weeks and many months. This is Antonio Barbera. It's post Super Bowl week. Time to unpack what the heck happened on Sunday night, and I'm joined by two of the best in the biz. First of all, on the East Coast, Tim Horsey. Tim, leading up to this game, we were about the matchup and about the teams involved. Coming out of it now, any change on that?
No. Football's over and Tom Brady's holding another Super Bowl. So I guess things are starting to heal themselves. The world is healing itself, or all that BS you see on Twitter all the time, because things are returning to normal. We'll get into it. I'll park my thoughts here for now, because before we get into the show. Not nearly as annoyed by it as I thought I would be. I'll just say that.
All right. That's a great start. And then joining on the West Coast, Jace Evans, how you feeling? 24 hours out from what we just watched.
Similar to Tim, actually, Antonio. I, too, am far less annoyed, bothered, irritated by Tom Brady winning another championship than I anticipated being. I don't want to say I'm zen or super calm about everything, but, you know, it kind of is what it is. I think, and we'll get into it a little later, but I think the way this game played out probably, at least in part, helped me internalize and come to grips with what was happening, which was Tom Brady winning yet another championship. It was a weird season. One we've never seen in the NFL in our lifetime, certainly. And yet it had a very familiar feeling at the end with Tom Brady winning his fifth Super Bowl MVP. So, as Tim said, a return to normalcy of some kind, I suppose.
I'm a little disappointed in the two of you. Then,
yeah, I wanted some more fire and brimstone.
I'm very annoyed by Tom Brady winning another Super Bowl. I'm just going to attribute it to the fact that I picked the Chiefs to win this game and cover, and my two co-hosts astutely were on Tampa Bay. So I'm gonna just, you know, move on and pretend that that's the reason that you guys aren't as angry with Tom Brady. All right. Before we get to that Super Bowl recap, we have a couple of quick, sort of small Ravens news and notes to go over, and then we will get into it. So a couple of things we want to discuss here briefly. The Ravens are losing assistant coaches seemingly by the day, which is, I guess, a good problem because it means that they were good coaches and were desired by other teams. One new name brought in is T. Martin, who's going to be the new wide receivers coach. He was an assistant coach at Tennessee, and he'll be coming to the Ravens. Patrick Queen finished third in Defensive Rookie of the Year honors. with Chase Young sort of dominating the votes, the defensive end from Washington, and then Jeremy Chinn, safety from Carolina, going in second, and then Patrick Queen in third, getting all of two votes, but still on the podium for Defensive Rookie of the Year. The Ravens re-signed cornerback Devontae Harris, who was sort of a depth guy for the Ravens last season, and is going to be a depth guy again next season. So I think he played well enough for the Ravens to want to keep him to sort of make sure that they have enough talent at that position. They always, one of the Raven mantras is that you can't have enough depth in the secondary. So that's a guy that they liked and hung on to. And then there's a little bit of clarity on Orlando Brown's tweet about being a left tackle that we'll get into a little bit here. So guys, looking at sort of these Ravens news and updates as a whole, maybe what stands out to you the most or what got your attention this week?
For me, Patrick Queen coming in third was probably the biggest news story, I'll say. And I don't know, I'm sure some Ravens fans will take umbrage with that. Patrick Queen, you know, had some thoughts about it on Twitter himself that he shared. But I think it's actually kind of just about right at the end of the day. I don't think he was probably consistent enough to be the defensive player of the year. You know, Chase Young, he had the benefit of being the second overall pick. He also had a very good season. So I was fine with him winning the award. I didn't really think twice about it when he was revealed as the winner. I kind of was just like, that makes sense. And, you know, I think Patrick Queen, bright future. I was pleased, certainly, with the large bulk of his season for a rookie year, especially one with such a abnormal off-season camp. But there's room to improve. I think we saw that. There was inconsistencies. There was some getting run over at times that I think will hopefully become less as he gets, you know, bulks up a little bit the more time he spends in sort of an NFL kind of strength regiment environment. So I'm sure you would have always liked to win awards when you're a competitive athlete, but I think third place probably about right for him. He had a good year. Don't think he was the best defensive rookie, so gives him something to strive for. You know, make a Pro Bowl or, you know, maybe even an All-Pro team in the future. But if he uses it as fuel, great.
I mean, yeah, he led the team in tackles with 106 tackles, 2 forced fumbles, 2 fumble recoveries, an interception. We were all elated when Patrick Queen fell to us at 28. And I remember doing the mock draft, and we had to end up with Cesar Ruiz, who, in retrospect, we needed a center badly, so that might have been a good thing. But I think we were all a little upset that in our mock draft, Queen didn't last to the Ravens pick, and were absolutely elated when he did. And look, for me, I like to just think of this as, take it as motivation. Patrick Queen, another Baltimore Raven player who loves social media and loves posting on social media about everything. And he did the little, like, I'm taking notes. So, you know what? Glass half full, great. If this is what you need to motivate yourself to be better, because Chase Young was better than you. But look, if you want to construe it in your way, like they always talk about the Michael Jordan mentality, stuff like that, I'm all for it. The only other couple things I have, Devontae Harris, like Jay said, he is a body, and that is it. Or Antonio, I think you said that. Apologies. If he plays as much as he did this season, I think we're in trouble. But, you know, you do need bodies back there, and maybe he grows and develops after so much playing time this past year. And then the Orlando Brown stuff I thought was interesting. So to take some of the quotes here, basically he tweeted out a clarification on the 5th of February, which was Friday before the Super Bowl. Quote, it's never been about the money. I'm so appreciative for this organization and all my teammates. I couldn't thank DaCosta enough. He's an incredible football mind and one of the best men I know. I just want to live out the dream my dad had for me. And it's a Baltimore Sun article and snips from this article about, if you didn't know, Zeus Sr., the late Zeus Sr., Orlando Brown Sr., played for the Ravens at right tackle and with the Browns and for a bunch of other teams in his career. But he always played right tackle. And the line is, and this comes directly from the current Orlando Brown Jr., the one that's on the Ravens right now. I remember my dad telling my high school coach at DeMatha, if he can't play left tackle, put him on defense. And essentially wanted his son to play. And if they didn't think he was good enough for left tackle, they wanted him to get on the field in some way, shape, or form. And that his dad always told him, Be better than me. In the NFL, it's usually taken if you're a left tackle, that means you're probably too good to play right. So I think a lot of this for him, and complete respect to him. He wants to live out what his father dreamt for him, and that's being an elite left tackle in this league. And I think he's shown that he can do it. In terms of what this means for next season, I still don't see them trading Orlando Brown. I think he has enough respect for the organization that, like we talked about last week, he'll go. They will sit down with him and they'll say, look, give us another year. Let's run this thing back one more time. Ronnie's coming back. We still need a little bit of cover for him anyway if he's not fully healthy yet. Plus, you're the best right tackle in this league. Let's go have some fun and maul some dudes. And then go get your money. Because if they trade him, I mean, they're trading him for a first. I'm sorry. The guy's a left tackle level player on the right side. You have to get at least a first round pick for him, which I don't see anybody giving a guy who also has to get paid. So I don't think it changes a ton, but I do appreciate the clarification of, look, I'm not trying to get my payday early. It's wanting to. He thinks this is the best path for him. He just came off a left tackle season. He wants to continue doing that. I understand it. I still don't think it's time for the Ravens fan base to panic about not having little Zeus on the right side of the offensive line this year.
Yeah. Go ahead, Antonio. Well, I was just going to say, I think they'll figure it out because I think, as you said, I think he is a left tackle and he will be paid as such. But I also think, like, for this upcoming season, you know, if you're a team in need of a left tackle, you're probably a bad team. And so I think it would probably be beneficial for, you know, all involved if he's able to play, stick out one more season at right tackle, you're going to compete. You're going to win a lot more than wherever you end up signing in free agency. But he is going to get paid and he's going to play left tackle. I think that's pretty clear. But I guess it's not my career, I guess, so it's easy to say from the 10,000 foot view, but it doesn't seem like something I would want to rush to play left tackle for a bad team when you have a very real chance to win the Super Bowl next year. So I think eventually they'll all come to an agreement around sort of those ideas of, this is a good team, we like you, you've been like, almost grew up in the organization quite literally, you know, with his dad playing here on multiple stints. So I think they'll figure something out in the long run, and I don't anticipate him being on the team in 2022, but I would be absolutely stunned if he's not the right tackle in 2021 for the Ravens.
I was just going to put you guys on the spot here somewhat and ask if in this offseason, as a hypothetical, a team, say, with a draft pick in the 10 to 20 range offered that first-round pick for Orlando Brown now, would you take it? Would you take that deal knowing just the number of contracts that the Ravens are going to have to pay and where he falls in that hierarchy?
As much as, and this is, again, admittedly not knowing the draft board as much, I think anywhere from 10 to 20, for me, it's still a no. Taking sort of the Rams mentality of, I think Orlando Brown, where he's at in his career, if he still wants to play right and is not going to hold out or anything, obviously, is more valuable than bringing another rookie into a team that's ready to win a Super Bowl. That's just my initial thought, on-the-spot thought of it, is that I'd rather have him for a season and let's run this thing back than another wide receiver that they're obviously going to miss on. Like, I don't know. That just doesn't seem... That doesn't seem smart for a team that wants to win the Super Bowl next year. So for me, no, I'm keeping him. Regardless, and saying that, fully confident that he's not going to be a Raven long term because, like you said, of everybody they have to pay.
Well, that's why I'd at least consider it, because I think if you can get any value for him, if you pretty much, from these comments and just knowing what he wants in his career and what you've already done, with Ronnie Stanley, invested, you know, 6 overall pick in him, $90 million or whatever it is, for him to play left tackle. You know Orlando Brown is not in your left tackle plans. And if he obviously doesn't want to play right tackle long term, I think you have to at least consider getting something in return for him, because otherwise he is just going to walk in a year. That being said, I agree with you, Tim. It really does hurt your 2021 I think championship prospects to just downgrade so severely at right tackle. I mean, we saw what moving Orlando Brown from right tackle to left tackle did to the right tackle position this past season, which was, it was not great. So, yeah, in that respect, I guess it depends how long-term they want to look. And they might be thinking long-term, because if you plan to have Lamar Jackson, you know, for another 10 years at least, you might say, let's get that first-round pick, because we want to run this back and be competitive year in, year out. It's fascinating, and that's why I'm glad I'm not the one paid to make these decisions, because it is a hard decision.
The depth point of that, Jace, is so great, because that's what they were comfortable doing with Hayden Hurst. They were very comfortable to move on from him, get whatever draft pick they could, because they had depth at that position, and he wasn't even the best tight end on the roster. When you look at how bad the depth is on this offensive line, as Tim noted, that value of Orlando Brown for one season is enormous. Even if you got a top pick for him and even drafted well, you still have a lot of other work to do on that offensive line to make it playoff worthy, much less Super Bowl worthy. So just, I'm just curious, want to throw that out there. We have certainly lots of weeks and months in the offseason to see how they move on with that. So that's it for Ravens news. We're going to do the random Raven now quickly, and then talk about the Super Bowl. That was Sunday night. I am up this week for the random Raven. I have already told the guys that they're not going to like me with the one that I've chosen here. I tried to give them some leeway so that they don't yell at me over the airwaves. So here is the random Raven. It's Super Bowl, well, post-Super Bowl week, so I made it Super Bowl themed. And this random Raven played for the team for, you guessed it, one season, God. The 2001 Super Bowl winning season for the Ravens. He played 9 seasons previously with the New England Patriots and retired after the Ravens season. He is in the New England Patriots Hall of Fame, which is sort of the Ravens Ring of Honor. It's the New England Patriots Hall of Fame, and is a 5-time Pro Bowler and 2-time All-Pro. Now, for the Ravens in that one season, he had 9 catches for 84 yards.
I mean, every time it's a receiver or a tight end.
He played in all 16 games, and he started 9, which was downright shocking to me. It's also very enjoyable that this player started 9 games and had 9 catches for the season. But that's, you know, that's Ravens football of old, is what that is. He was a backup for the Ravens and played behind an eventual Hall of Famer. That's the clue for the listener there. And I'm going to save my last clue for the end of the show, because I think that's, we'll sort of narrow down who it is. So I'm going to leave it there, and at the end I'll add this final clue to the random Raven description. So I'm getting all, I don't know what's going on with my co-host.
I think I actually do have it. I think.
I mean, I know the position, because I know the... You know what? Spoiler alert. It's not going to be a future Hall of Famer at wide receiver, listener, because it's the Baltimore Ravens. Let's just put it that way. I'll give you that little tip. But after that, yeah, I have no clue. I know who that Hall of Famer is that you're talking about. And I'm trying to think, who played that position for the Super... Oh, yeah, was that... Oh, nope, that's the clue. Okay, so it's not this guy. Who in the... Yeah, I have no idea. So, yeah. Long story short, I have no idea.
All right, we will answer that at the end of the show. But first, let's talk about Bucks Chiefs 31-9, a Buccaneers dominating performance over, unarguably, the best team in the NFL this season, the best team in the NFL last season, and they certainly did not look that strong in the Super Bowl, scoring 9 points, which still seems impossible to me, looking at these numbers the day after the Super Bowl. So, guys, just first impressions, watching this game, you know, without getting too much into nuts and bolts here, thoughts on this result?
The Bucs defense, as I've been telling you all year on this podcast, is awesome. Run through it. Vita Vea, Ndamukong Suh, Shaq Barrett, Jason Pierre-Paul, Devin White, Levante David, Antoine Winfield Jr., 4th in Rookie of the Year voting, by the way. This team on the defensive side is awesome, and Todd Bowles is a fantastic coach. It made one of the best, and I'll just go general here because I think we should all give general thoughts before diving in, because I got numbers, I got stats, I got things I want to complain about, a.k.a. Devin White not winning MVP. What Todd Bowles did in terms of kind of changing what he does but still having that defense do what it does well, and that is pressure the quarterback mainly, but changing his scheme to do that was so incredibly impressive, and it made the Chiefs look like a high school team. And I think there's a lot to get into here. I think the importance of the offense and defensive line. If you listen to this podcast, you know that's my thoughts on this game. It comes down to the offense and defensive line, and that's what it did on Sunday, and that's why Tampa is a Super Bowl champion and not Kansas City.
I wasn't stunned to see the Bucs win. I had a feeling they were going to for, you know, I didn't have great reasons last week, but I just, it felt like for me, I was like, is Tom Brady going to lose the same team twice, especially in the Super Bowl in 1 year? I didn't see it happening, but I think if you had told me the Bucs blow out the Chiefs and the Chiefs don't score a touchdown, that was not on my radar as how this game would go. I thought it would be close. I thought, you know, the Bucs would score like a last minute TD or something, but they were in control pretty much, you know, the moment they get that first Gronkowski touchdown. From then on, the Bucs really were in control the entire time, and Chiefs never threatened them, especially in the second half. I was just really impressed. Yeah, it was a thoroughly dominating performance. As Tim said, both lines, I thought, Bucks, I thought, ran the ball pretty well. They kept Brady pretty clean, all things considered. And I mean, they got after Mahomes. That's to me the biggest takeaway. It was just, I never saw a world where the Chiefs scored 9 points in the Super Bowl and no touchdowns. It's just stunning to me.
We've seen the outline for how to beat the Chiefs. We've read the stories of what you need to do well. And the Bucs did everything well in this game. Not three quarters of the list, not half of the list, not everything, but one thing. Just you run through the checklist. They ran the ball well. They tackled everyone quickly, and there were not a lot of broken tackles for the Chiefs. They were able to double, not only try to double Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, but they actually had them pretty much sandwiched the entire game, and they still had catches, they still had yards, but some of that came, you know, in the second half of that game, some of the garbage time stats, but they were never sort of they never made game-breaking plays, basically, for all 60 minutes. They got immediate pressure on Mahomes on almost every down. I rewatched the highlights before, sort of the extended highlights before jumping on this pod, and it was shocking. I think we texted at a certain point that it felt a little bit like a Ravens game when Lamar is running for his life on every play, except Mahomes, yes, he scrambles, but he doesn't have the sort of like breaking away speed and the ankle-breaking juke move. So he literally running for his life with the Bucs only having to rush four. The Bucs did not make a mistake, really, all game. And the one mistake that they did make was then taken away from the Chiefs with a penalty that we'll get into at some point. They won time of possession. They had more time of possession than the Bucs did, or than the Chiefs did, excuse me. And they would have had another touchdown, but they truly got stopped on the 1-inch line where he may have gotten in on that play. Maybe it was a touchdown, but this could have been a game that was 40-9 as opposed to 38-9 instead of 31-9. So we have, if you're a Ravens fan listening to this, you have the tape now. This is what you need to do to beat these Chiefs. But it wasn't a close game, as Jace mentioned. It was an absolute blowout. Let's start with the Bucs defense now, guys. Tim, I'll let you take this one because you've been you have been talking about Bucs D for months, and they absolutely came to play, especially on the line. We thought maybe the Chiefs could patch things together with their offensive line. Other teams have done it. You know, you think having a tackle out, you can sort of work things out by maybe moving the right tackle or having a young guy who hasn't had a lot of opportunities fill into one of these spots. But very, very early in this game, you could see that whatever the Chiefs had tried to do on the offensive line was just not going to work.
I mean, it was telling when, and wasn't for the recording of the last podcast we did because it came after, But JPP was asked about the right tackle, and apologies, I can't remember the guy's name, who stepped in for Kansas City. And they asked him about him because they're like, you've played this guy before. What do you think about him? And JPP goes, I don't remember him, but I'm coming after him, basically. And at that point, we should have been like, okay, these guys are going to just absolutely dominate. I just want to talk about the defense. I literally might get up while you guys talk about Tom Brady and the offense because I don't really care. And I think for me, that is why this Super Bowl didn't annoy me as much. One, it's not Brady making some miraculous comeback. Two, the penalties, which we will get into, didn't really affect the game as much as people, you know, grasping at straws might want to say it that they did. They didn't. And three, it was the defense that won this game. Todd Bowles, a guy who loves sending the house. He's from the Wink Martindale School of Defense. Flipped his game plan. The Buccaneers only blitzed. Remember, listener, you watch this game. Remember how many times Patrick Mahomes was being pressured? A Super Bowl record 29 times. He had 497 scramble yards. 497 scramble yards. That is 5 football fields of scramble yards as he was running for his life, either, you know, getting out of the pocket, gaining positive yardage, or running around before being sacked or making these miraculous incompletions that the internet wants to lose its mind over, even though they are incompletions. The Bucs only blitzed 9.6% of the time, even with all of that. On their 4-man rushes, they had 16 pressures. Basically, 34% of the time, they were pressuring the quarterback with 4 guys. Insane numbers there. Absolutely insane. And here's what you do. When you can get immediate pressure like that, it allows your defense to sit back. They sat back, and they had 2 deep safeties the entire game. They played 10 snaps in dime, which is 6 defensive backs, if I've got my numbers right there, which that is more than they played all regular season long combined. They were able to sit back and allow to keep everything in front of them. And by the way, the other thing they had in front of them in terms of the secondary was Devin White and Lavonte David. You talk about doubling Kelsey. There are some plays there, and as analyst Marlon Humphrey on Twitter pointed out, which always a great follow, not just for a Ravens fan, but just in general mischief and daily life. He was saying that Lavonte David might have been the best player out there that wasn't named Devin White because he was containing Kelsey himself. He was doing what Tony Romo was screaming for in the AFC Championship game. He was hitting Kelsey. He wasn't letting Kelsey get clean breaks, and they had the athleticism to keep up with him. Devin White was all over the field, man. He looked like, the way I was talking to somebody else, he reminded me of Ray Lewis in that Super Bowl 35 game when Ray had the one play where he's on the right side of the field, Tiki Barber runs left, and Ray makes it all the way over and stops him for a 2-yard gain. I don't know why that play just always sticks in my head amongst all the other great plays he had in his career, but that's what Devin White reminds me of. And he's faster because the game is faster, and he needs to be a better pass coverage guy than anybody like Ray was. But that's who it looks like in the back or in the linebacking core there. It was absolutely insane. And the way these guys stepped up, I mean, Vita Vea, who is like, I don't know, what, 650 pounds at this point, was playing defensive end and getting pressure. That was a mean, mean defensive performance. They went in there. They were pissed off about the loss last time. I love Antoine Winfield Jr. taking the taunting penalty for doing the deuces to Tyreek Hill after Tyreek Hill backflipped into the end zone the last time that they played. They were pissed off, and they came with a perfect game plan for it. And, man, again, this is why I wasn't upset about Tom Brady lifting it. Because guess what? 000s hit the clock. I turned it off. I didn't have to watch the trophy celebration because I wasn't going to subject myself to that. All I'm going to remember from this Super Bowl is the Buccaneers dominating defense, and it was just so cool to watch.
I was so impressed with Todd Bowles, and I think the more we get out from it, you know, I think it's safe to say he probably deserves another head coaching chance, given how just he probably is one of the top assistant coaches out there in the NFL. And you look back, guy went 10-6 with the Jets. That's like basically winning the Super Bowl as it is. But he was just so everything. So they just got so torched by Tyreek Hill, right, in that first game they played earlier this season. And to just basically go back to the drawing board and devise this plan that just holds them, especially Hill, completely under wraps for the most part. He had 73 yards. He only, you know, broke a few plays here and there, but nothing crazy. They didn't let Tyreek Hill hurt them. And as Tim, you mentioned, just the going with the more dime looks, the different looks. I was just so impressed with that. And obviously a big reason why that worked is because of how much pressure they were able to get, especially just with four. And I don't know how many years I have to watch, one team just completely dominate with a four-man rush. The Denver Broncos come to mind in Super Bowl 50 a few years back. Obviously, those Patriots upsets against the Giants when the Giants were able to pressure with four. It is just so clear that how important it is to be able to pressure with four, five guys max is to winning, like, to help win a championship. It just opens up so much for you. And I'll at least speak for me personally, to spin it briefly to a Ravens perspective. It did make me consider if the Ravens have to really think harder about pass rush than maybe, you know, I would have thought heading into this season. You know, they make the midseason move for Yannick Ngakoue. Doesn't really work out. But you just watch this game and just Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul, and you mentioned him, Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh getting pressure up the middle. There was one time I thought, you know, Vea was going to, like, eat Patrick Mahomes. And they hit him. I mean, 29 hurries is crazy. I believe they hit him 9 times. He was just under siege all night. And being able to do that while not 10 quarterback hits the Bucs were credited with. And being able to do that just without even having to send the house all that much, less than 10% of the time. It's just such an advantage, and especially we see on these big stages in the Super Bowl, especially. It seems like the best defenses end up being the ones that can rush four, and that kind of solves a lot of your problems on the back end, because it's like, if you can disrupt them with four, that's just so many bodies to cover in the backside. And that's clearly what helped them in this game, in slowing down your Tyreek Hills, your Travis Kelce's. And obviously, you mentioned, those linebackers are probably the best tandem in the NFL, David. And I mean, I love Devin White coming out of LSU, but I didn't even know if he'd be this good. But
well, there's a reason, Jace, that he's a middle linebacker going top 10, right? Or even top yeah. 5, right? He might have gone.
Yeah, I think he was the 5th overall pick, maybe the 6th. But they're so talented. And Vea was a top 10 pick, I think, at least top 15. Obviously, Sue was like a 3rd overall pick once upon a time. Jason Pierre-Paul, 1st round pick. So it's a lot of talent up front. But, I mean, they were just impressive. And it made me a little jealous because I was like, I want that for the Ravens. I want pressure with four. It's just such a luxury.
And the Chiefs had this streak of games, mostly playoff games, where they had fallen behind. The offense had looked ugly for quarters or for stretches, specifically early in the game. And then in every single one of those playoff games, they had turned it on at some point in the game, and the big plays came, and the touchdowns came, and everything was fine, and Mahomes was Mahomes, and the Chiefs came out with wins. I remember at halftime, I sort of unplugged. I had to go outside and smoke a cigarette, which is a joke. I don't actually smoke cigarettes, but I was so annoyed at the end of the first half, so I literally went outside. And in the back of my head, I just remember. I said, oh, like, listen, it's the Chiefs. This is what happens. The big plays are going to come. The offense will explode in the second half. And it just never happened in this game. Even when it's I don't want to say blowout, but even when it's a 20-point game and the Bucs' defensive strategy changed slightly and that now they're just keeping everything in front of them, even with that, the Chiefs were not able to score a touchdown in the second half of this game. So I want to get your guys' thought on that particular aspect of the Chiefs. At what point in this game did you think, oh my goodness, like this is, they're out of bullets basically. Like the explosion is not going to come in this game.
For me, it was when they settled for the field goal out of halftime. And we'll probably get in, I'm sure momentarily, to the before half shenanigans that resulted in the score being 21-6. I wasn't feeling great at that point. I would have been a lot better at 14-6 as, you know, kind of a neutral observer thinking if the Chiefs would win. Or even, you know, I think 17-6 you can, but 21-6 was steep, but I was like, all right, you know, they get the ball out of the half, they can do something with it. I mean, they go seven plays, 47 yards, but they have to settle for a field goal, 52-yard field goal at that, so they didn't get especially close. And then the Bucks just responded, six plays, 74 yards, in that Leonard Fournette touchdown run where I was like, well, someone's got to tackle him, and he just kind of kept running, and you're like, oh. I don't want to say it looked like they gave up, but, like, they did look a little demoralized after that Fournette run. And at 28-6, I was like, Tom Brady's not pulling a Falcons here. Like, they're not blowing. They're not blowing. Or it was 28-9, I guess, at that point. But, yeah, at that point, to go up 28-9, that was kind of when I was like, I don't think it's happening. I just thought the deficit was too great. The Bucks, or the Chiefs rather, had just not enough answers, and I just didn't, you know. I have a lot more faith in Tom Brady not blowing a, you know, however, nearly 30-point lead there. So, you know, I don't want to say it was game over, but kind of felt game over, and just how much of a struggle had been for the Chiefs to that point to come away at that first drive out of halftime without a touchdown, I think was kind of for me where I was like, oh, this might not be happening.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't really know. I don't remember sitting back watching the game on Sunday night and having a definitive moment of like, oh, this is the time. I think it was probably around the same time as Jace, you know, the kick in the field goal and everybody doing the whole, like, oh, can't win the game with field goals joke that, you know, the Bills obviously got slammed for, and the Packers earlier in this playoffs, everybody's getting slammed for trying to kick field goals in a game that they have to win. I thought, I guess around then, because for me it was more of the emphasis on the point that Jace made of the air of inevitability with Tom Brady, like the Thanos quality of Tom Brady that is like, oh yeah, right, of course it's 21-9 and they had some BS pass interference calls to get them right down on the line. Okay, of course this is how this is going to happen. Sure, why not? And again, like I said, for 2 weeks leading up to this game, I was almost tuned out when the Bucks were on offense. I think the only reason I actually did watch the Bucks on offense was one, so I didn't miss any of the defense by turning it off and turning it back on too late, and two, because I do this podcast and I'm a professional. But yeah, it had to be around that halftime point. Because I was with you, Antonio. Like, you kept seeing them get dominated, the Kansas City Chiefs get dominated on the line, and the defense flying, the Tampa Bay defense flying around, and yet you still had this whole, like, oh, Mahomes will be fine. Like, Mahomes will figure it out. He's Mahomes. Mahomes, Mahomes, Mahomes. I will say, I think Mahomes was definitely playing a lot more hurt than we thought. He's obviously, if you haven't heard the news, having surgery on his toe. You know, other athletes have made fun of him for, like, doing the little duck waddle run. Like, don't be fooled by that. He'll be fine, which I think is a funny tactic. But he definitely seemed like he was a little bit out of sorts. And then compounding that with the, you know, the 7-minute rant I just went on about how good the defense was, too. I think all those factors combined into him being, you know, average at best and obviously not being helped by anybody. But yeah, long story short, I guess it was probably halftime where I was like, oh, you know, this is going to be a Tom Brady game, isn't it? And then the field goal and then the touchdown for the Buccaneers right after that, which makes it 28-9. At that point, I'm like, all right, well, might as well, like, just scroll Twitter now and watch the end of this game go out because this is over.
So let's go back to the first half then. Tampa Bay has three touchdown drives in this game. All three of them have a Chiefs penalty in them. Some of them were penalties. I'm not going to complain this fervently that, as Tim mentioned, the Chiefs didn't lose this game because of penalties. The Chiefs lost this game because they got dominated at multiple positions. However, in all three of these possessions, I think there were some ticky-tack calls, and maybe calls that you don't normally make in the Super Bowl when guys are just sort of hand fighting, but they made every single one of these calls, and it seemed like every single one of these ticky-tack calls went against the Chiefs and went for Tampa Bay. The on the second Bucks touchdown drive, That's where there's the double tip that Tyrann Mathieu intercepts. They call a holding where, to me, it looked like Mike Evans was hand-fighting exactly as much as the defender who was guarding him on that play. I don't know how you call that flag on one specific player. Then on the last drive of the first half, where the Bucs are able to go 71 yards in less than a minute, the other pass interference on Mike Evans, where, again, we have seen a corner when he gets tripped by the heel of the offensive player. They do not call pass interference because they consider it incidental contact. They let him play. The ball lands 7 yards beyond Mike Evans, and they don't throw a flag. In a lot of situations, they did throw the flag in that particular moment. Then, later on that same drive, with a throw to the end zone that I'm pretty sure would have hit the crossbar because it was so high, or maybe even one of the uprights because it was so high, that ball's through the end zone. That's the Brady throw where he just doesn't want to get sacked, so he throws it at one of his receivers. And if it's 10 yards over his head, whatever, it's not intentional grounding, they get another down. They call pass interference on that. It's not catchable. It's not a catchable ball. But they don't review that. They don't talk about it. They don't consider. It's a flag on the Chiefs, and the Bucs have the ball on the 1 yard line. I'm going to stop myself because I don't want to turn this into a penalty rant. But in a game where every single play matters, it's a Super Bowl, every mistake can you know, certainly hamper your chances by really wide margins. I'll just get your guys' thoughts on the first half penalty decisions based on what the game was and how much football the three of us have watched and how penalties are called in the NFL.
Yeah, look, me saying earlier they didn't affect the game doesn't mean these calls weren't complete and utter BS. I mean, they absolutely were. And to take our lovely segment that reoccurs every so often, what's bothering, this time it's Tim, take uncatchable out of the rule. Just do it. Just admit that you're too much of a coward to, like, not give anything to the defense at any time. These guys are already playing with two hands tied behind their back. And yet Tom Brady can launch it to New Guinea, and you can still call the penalty because it's like, oh, Mike Evans is really tall. He might have come down with it. It is a family show, and it's taking everything in my power not to just cuss up a storm during this part because it's the most infuriating part of pass interference, which I think is a load of BS anyway most of the time. And hand up, being more of a defensive guy than an offensive guy. To hamper these defensive players who are already having an incredibly tough job because everything favors the offense, and then you have it written in your rule that uncatchable means it's not pass interference, yet it hasn't been called since the 50s. It just makes absolutely no sense that they have it in the rule. Just take it out. Just take it out, and we can stop complaining. We can disagree with it and think it should be in there. But if you just want points, 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 fine. I re-sign Joe Flacco at that point. Have him launch it out of the stadium, and hopefully they tackle Torrey Smith every once in a while. And we're moving, baby. We're moving the ball down the field. It's utterly freaking ridiculous, that uncatchable stuff. And the only other thing here on the penalties, they knew going in that Carl Cheffers, who we get the best, it's not just one referee crew, we pick the best referees of from everywhere. And I should say, really cool the history was made with Sarah Thomas being the first female referee in a Super Bowl. That's great. No one is disputing that. But find a head guy and line judges too. I would rather them not go whatever freaking point scale they do to pick who's in the Super Bowl that year. Find me the guy that lets them play. The guy or gal, I should say. Find me the referee who lets them play. Not the ticky-tack ref who, if you averaged more than 7 flags a game, you should not be allowed to ref a Super Bowl. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I don't care if you're reffing Ravens games all the time and it's one of those Matt Judon games and he's liable for 3 of them anyway. I don't care. If you throw more than 7 flags per game, you should not be in the Super Bowl, probably not even in the postseason, because you can't. The fact that it's subjective anyway is an absolute joke. And then you allow these guys who just want to be on television and just want to throw tic-tac calls for every little thing so they can turn on their little microphone and go, look, mommy, I was on TV. It is so freaking ridiculous, and I can't stand it. Like, I don't care how good Carl Cheffers is as a referee. Man, he sees holding really well. Like, I don't care. Give me a guy that's going to let people play, because I think every football fan would rather some of these calls get missed than an overcorrection where they're calling the slightest stuff every single time. Because it takes the fun out of the game.
I think that's what's crazy. One of my colleagues, Mike Freeman, actually wrote a column kind of to this effect. But I think the main problem, and I completely agree with him in this case, is just, and you mentioned it, Tim, just the inconsistency crew to crew, ref to ref. There's no standard in the NFL as to what is or isn't a penalty. I just looked it up. There were 6 penalties called the NFC Championship game last week. The Bucks, or 2 weeks ago, the Bucks last game. 6 total penalties. And we saw so many more flags in the Super Bowl. Like, in that game, they were letting guys kind of clobber each other and just kind of play, and they didn't call many flags until late. But in this game, there was just flag after flag after flag. And, you know, the numbers are stunning. Again, no conspiracy here, but the Bucks picked up a Super Bowl record 6 first downs via penalty, and also the Chiefs 90 yards of penalties in the second quarter, also a Super Bowl record. I don't think there's a conspiracy there. I think most of the penalties probably, you know, under the letter of the law were penalties, probably, for the most part. But, yeah, it's just never knowing what you're going to get crew to crew. And for me, obviously, personally, I don't want to see the refs this involved, especially in the Super Bowl. So, you know, that many first downs via penalties, just disappointing to see. I don't think the NFL has a vested interest in getting 43-year-old Tom Brady another Super Bowl over Patrick Mahomes, who's going to be the face of your league for the next 15 years. But I do think there's just inconsistency on the officiating level that is not great.
Also, at risk of losing Tim here, I'm going to try to make sure Tim stays in his seat as we turn to the Bucs offense. There's always a guy seemingly in every Super Bowl that you didn't think of him, and he comes out and he's the star offensively, either a running back that has 100 yards or the eighth receiver who has 10 catches. In this game, it was sort of like an inverse thing where it was the return of a guy who was a superstar and had sort of become the fifth or sixth option here. And it's the Rob Gronkowski game in a way here. 6 catches, 67 yards, 2 touchdowns for a guy that really was getting like 1 to 2 targets, even not just catches, but 1 to 2 targets in several games toward the end of the season. Thoughts on Gronkowski's game. And then Leonard Fournette, who was the other sort of maybe prototypical guy who has not been a superstar in his NFL career, had bounced around moving from Jacksonville to Tampa Bay this year. And he had an excellent game with 16 carries, 89 yards, and a touchdown, and 4 receptions for 46 yards. So the Gronkowski game and the playoff Lenny, what did you guys think of the Bucs skill players?
I mean, if you look at this, and if you haven't seen these stats, let's just run through the ones that have been, if you're not addicted to Twitter like I am, and I know Jace is, and Antonio to a lesser degree, but, you know, follows all these things, obviously. Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski are the same age. All the guys who scored touchdowns for Tampa Bay joined after Tom Brady and joined because Tom Brady was there, and the entire league passed on Leonard Fournette when he was cut from the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, kidding aside, I think this was very much a Tom was going to go to his guys thing. You know, the leaders in catches, Fournette with 4, Antonio Brown with 5, and Gronk with 6. He was going to his dudes. Mike Evans had 1 catch and a BS DPI. Chris Godwin, 2 catches for 9 yards, and really hasn't been that big of a factor in these playoffs outside of a couple plays. This was Tom Brady going to, I almost said just Tom, and I was about to leave the podcast there immediately. Announce my resignation right there. I listened to way too much Bill Simmons prepping for this show today. This was about Brady going back to his guys, the warriors that he's been in these battles with, and, you know, older heads and stuff like that. And the Gronkowski thing, man, like, we should have known. How stupid are we? Yes, he's going to go to the greatest tight end of all time and the guy who was breaking postseason records left and right with those 2 touchdown catches he had. I mean, we'll get to our prop bets in a second. I don't think any of us had Gronk, and it is incredibly annoying. So look, this is not an original take. People have said this, but this is almost like the NBAization of the NFL, where these players are going to ring chase. They're going to take lesser money to be on these teams, and if you can follow the winningest quarterback of all time to this super team that already has an incredible defense established and a coach that clearly was going to just be hands-off and let the guys be the guys in Bruce Arians, I mean, he's the perfect type of coach for this, why wouldn't you do it? I mean, Mike Evans has already said on Monday, he said, I'm more than willing to take less money to keep this team around because they have all of these superstars that all wanted to follow Brady to Tampa Bay, get in the warm weather, no state tax, and win a championship. And that's exactly what they did. So, you know, I don't have nearly as many stats for how they targeted Gronkowski compared to how they would do other guys and why Antonio Brown got more involved, other than just the straight, it was Brady trusting his dudes in the biggest moment because, especially with Gronk, that dude has come up for him time and time and time again. So I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, their bromance is very clear when you kind of watch some of the post-game celebrations. The guys love playing together, and I guess they played together for a long time, but they do have
Gronk,
a good connection.
Gronk said, I will retire if you trade me to Detroit. Just cut me. I'll retire anyway and then go show up in Tampa wherever Tom goes.
Was a story I had like completely forgotten about, but I was as happy as I guess I can be for Rob Gronkowski to come back out of retirement. He's fun. I know, you know, he tortured the Ravens for years, but he is fun. And, you know, he probably will go down as the greatest or certainly top five tight ends of all time. And so for him to come out of retirement, certainly take a reduced role, and then still, you know, on Super Sunday, come up with the best game of any Bucks receiver. They clearly must have known something with the matchup, because I didn't realize this ahead of time either, talking about props we should have seen. His season high for yardage was actually their first game, the Bucks' first game against the Chiefs. So clearly something about that matchup worked out well for Gronk, and they executed. As for Fournette, a fascinating stat from my colleague Nate Davis is Fournette is just the third player to have touchdowns in four different games in the postseason. Position player joined Terrell Davis and Larry Fitzgerald. So select company for hashtag playoff Lenny, who probably made himself some money here since he's a free agent again, I believe, after you know, just signing a short deal after passing through waivers. So I always like, you know, stories like him where I wasn't a huge Fournette fan at Jacksonville. Obviously, he didn't have the most startling numbers, but you always, I think, like to see guys succeed kind of when they're given a second chance. So it was cool to see him too. And I mean, he was awesome in the playoffs. He kind of did it all for them. So that was pretty cool to see too.
Last thoughts on the Super Bowl, guys, before we go over how unsuccessful our prop bets were.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure a defensive player is going to have to, I don't know, perform a holy miracle on the field before they win MVP. I think it's ridiculous that Brady won. And again, I didn't know until later because as soon as they took that knee and triple zeros went on, I turned it off because I was like, I'm not watching Brady celebrate. And maybe that's why I'm not nearly as upset as Antonio is today. And there might be some other reasons for that too, I'm sure, as we'll get into to prop bets later. But I think that's ridiculous. It's so weird because I think I'm so in love with this defense. I think they might be my favorite non-Ravens thing about the NFL right now. I can't think of anything else that I love more than watching dominant defensive play and like just having studs. We should talk a little bit about how this affects the Ravens, this being a Ravens podcast. I know we kind of sprinkled that in. My one big thing, and we're going to obviously all off season, it's going to be Ravens, Ravens, Ravens heavy. So we'll get into this. I still haven't made up my mind, like when Jace was saying before, if this makes pass rusher priority number one for me. I almost go the other way where it's look at what they did to Mahomes. Imagine what they can do to Lamar. So maybe we actually need more protection, and that's a debate we'll have. Two, I love that it's a pity party for Patrick Mahomes when he doesn't have weapons or an offensive line, but I'll leave that there. And other non-Ravens point, I should say, or no, another Ravens point I should say here. We have the blueprint to beat the Chiefs, but now you kind of need the dudes. So maybe that answers my question about what I think the priority is. Because, again, Vita Vea, Ndamukong Suh, Shaq Barrett, JPP, Devin White, Levante David are your front seven. Front six. Doesn't get better than that. And then a non-Ravens point, finally, my final kind of Super Bowl thing in here is I'm finally going to say it, and it could just be a case of when there's a lot of this person, maybe you're starting to get tired of him. I was big on this commentator for a long time. I have some friends, good friends, who absolutely despise him, and I am starting to get some Tony Romo fatigue. I am just a little bit done with the, Jim! And just the kind of losing his mind at every little thing. I like the tactical breakdown stuff. I like the nerdy stuff. I have no problem. I think we lost Chase. I have no problem with him, like, predicting the plays and stuff. Like, when he first got in the booth, people were having an issue with that. I love that stuff because I love the really nerdy parts of the game. But the, Jim thing is way too old at this point. And, look, I still think he's better than Phil Simms at the end of Phil Simms' run because that guy was a walking joke at that point in terms of doing color commentary. But I'm getting a little too much Romo in my life. So maybe it's good that we can step back and maybe come August, September, I'll be all back in on the Tony train. But for now, I'm just
not. Yeah, I guess my final takeaway just on the MVP side of things is I agree it probably should have been, certainly should have been someone on the defense. I think the problem they ended up having
was they were just all too good.
Yeah, they split the vote, and there has actually been dual MVPs back in the early days of the Super Bowl. They gave two Cowboys defenders the Super Bowl MVP, but they haven't liked to do that. So I don't know. They could have brought back dueling MVPs, but the line he put up, 21 for 29, 201, 3 TDs, no picks. I get why Tom Brady was the MVP. And, you know, say what you want about the guy. Dude can't stop winning. He's 43 years old, just won another Super Bowl. I don't get it. I don't really understand why it works or how. He's not that physically impressive. He really never has been. And then, you know, there's QBs who could do. We saw the guy on the other sideline ran, as Tim said, almost 500 yards of running in that game, to just scrambling all over the place. And Tom, just three steps and throws, and he just keeps. He's won every other Super Bowl for the last 5 years, so I don't know what's there to say about it. It's 16, 8, or 14, 16, 18, 20 now. So I guess in 2022, we'll be talking about 45-year-old Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl again.
Now I didn't enjoy that. I didn't like that.
I didn't want.
I was completely fine, and now I'm mad about it. Now I'm glad we're about to move on because that's infuriating.
Prop bets. Let's talk about them. I will go through mine quickly.
Pitch
here.
Back,
we can go in order. I will say I'm pretty proud that my sort of write this down in ink, get your phones out, get your notepad out. Prop bet did hit. It was the Clyde Edwards-Helaire under 10.5 carries. He had 9 carries in this game. And once Tampa Bay had a lead by the second quarter, I felt better and better about that prop because there was no way they were going to just start feeding Edwards-Helaire multiple times in this game. The Brady throws an interception prop hit, so I won that. Oh, wait a minute. No, they took that interception away off of a phantom call. So I didn't hit that prop because, as Tim said, Carl Cheffers had to exist. So lost that prop. You can imagine how annoyed I was in-game when they took that away. And then the Mike Evans, I had a Mike Evans touchdown prop as well. He had that one catch streaking over the middle, and he was seemingly heading for the pylon and then just went out of bounds at the 5-yard line. So I did not get the touchdown for Mike Evans. And I also lost my game pick on this, which was Chiefs -3. So, in terms of game picks, I end the season 31-20, which I will take every year for the rest of my life. So I felt pretty good about that, but only 1-3 with my props for the Super Bowl. Tim is gonna highlight it in his section, but I just want to agree with him now before he goes. With the Chiefs now being a Super Bowl losing team, Tim, I'm all in, man. I'm all in for that Ravens to win the Super Bowl at 12-1, because now the Chiefs have to have the hangover. That's just how the NFL works. So now they're not going to be as good next year, and that 12-1 is looking extremely spicy.
It's really funny, because to take people behind the curtain, you mentioned that before we started recording, and I was like, in my head, I was like, wait a minute, no. Like, now they're going to be pissed off, now they're going to come back, but you're right. Every Super Bowl loser is bad the next season. Like, it's one of the most faultless things in the NFL. It's just death, taxes, and the loser of the Super Bowl not being as good every single time. And maybe Tom Brady winning Super Bowls, unfortunately. So, look, if anybody can turn around that trend, it's Patrick Mahomes. But I like the positivity. So outside of that, I actually went 4-4 on game pick / prop bets. Pretty impressed by that. I didn't do a season total like Antonio did. Obviously, I won the Bucks +3 pick. I know I cheated a little bit on this one, and I just ranted and raved about how I hated it. But I said sprinkle a little money on Mahomes and Brady, because one of them is going to win MVP. They're not going to give it to anybody else unless they legitimately walk on water on the field. So that one I won with Brady at 9-5. I lost, speaking of Brady, the over half a rushing yard from Tom Brady at +100. They were on the goal line. All I needed was that 1 yard. All I needed, if you listen to the Pat McAfee show, they had the Bucks quarterback coach on, and they were actually joking in the quarterback room. Brady saw that prop, and he was like, if I could, I'd put $1 million on it, and we'd be going for one of those sneaks at some point. So, you know what, Tom? It would have been a win-win for me, because it would have tarnished your reputation because you started gambling. We wouldn't be able to put you in the Hall of Fame like Pete Rose, and I would have won that bet. It would have been amazing, but obviously that didn't happen, and clearly he was joking. To get back to the winning side, I originally wanted JPP to record a sack. I ended up going Shaq Barrett instead, and I ended up winning that with Shaq Barrett at -115. Thank you very much. I lost the successful 2-point. I lost the missed field goal hitting the upright. I lost.
Which was close, Tim. There were some kicks there that were in contention.
Yeah, and we should mention the Chiefs punter, very bad. Rookie in that situation did not play up to snuff. And guess what? When you don't have to punt that much and then the biggest game of your life, you might start dropping the ball and shanking every single punt that you had. Speaking of punts, I did win my total punts. It was over 6.5 is what I ended up going with at the end. It ended up being 7, so thank the Lord for that. I just thought it was going to be a tense game because the Super Bowl always is. So I think I went over. If you listen back to the episode, because I know I was going back and forth on that, if I screwed that up, apologies, but I thought I went over. Maybe I didn't. Whatever. It was 7. So again, Vegas nails the line. And the last one, Antonio ruined for me. If you don't know,
we got to talk about this. We have to get into it.
Outside of the Ravens, who are my first love far and away, I also very much enjoy watching Liverpool Football Club, except recently. And the prop that I had to try and tie a little bit of soccer, a little bit of what I do for a living into this podcast, was more Bucks touchdowns than Liverpool plus Man City goals. Now, if you don't know, Liverpool-Man City is usually a pretty tight tie. It was if Liverpool lost this, they're essentially out of the title race now type of game. And a lot of times it's ended 0-0 or 1-1. So I'm thinking, best case scenario, 1-1, hey, maybe even a 1-0 win for the Reds, up the Reds. And all the Bucks have to do is get 3 touchdowns, 2, maybe even 2, and we're golden. So at halftime, it's 0-0. Man City had skied a penalty already. Neither team really looked like scoring that much. Things were going great. And Antonio Barbera decides to text the group, looks like your prop bet is going to be fantastic. Well, Man City decided... Hold on.
I did not use the future tense. I wouldn't be that much of a jinxer. But I think I said, like, it looks like it's going well. It looks good. Looks great. Looks fantastic. Something like that. Yeah, so that was, I think, right at the start of the second half.
I have the transcript here.
Hit me with it.
Liverpool prop looking fantastic. And then, let's see, that was at 12:34. At 12:44, Jesus, LOL, that's on me. The rest of the second half, there were 5 total goals scored in the second half, and no, lovely listener, nah, it was not a win for the Reds. They ended up losing 4-1, so it was the worst of both worlds for myself, and that has, you know, full blame doesn't go to Jurgen Klopp, it doesn't go to the injuries, it doesn't go to starting 2 midfielders at center back, even though you're playing against the best team in the world, or one of them. It goes to Antonio Barbera for screwing that one up.
The first goal was scored shockingly quick after I sent that. I mean, I'm like 3 minutes after I sent that text, which was the 49th minute of the second half. And then there were goals scored in the 63rd, 73rd, 76th, and 83rd. It was a succession, and I feel bad. I feel bad for Liverpool fans. I feel bad for Tim. And bad for those who took that prop, because that one's on me. So send me your receipts, and we can talk about that.
I don't have anything that exciting on my props ledger here, but I did get the game pick, Bucks plus 3. I also won the Chiefs will not have a rushing touchdown, because it turned out they had none touchdowns, which of course made me lose the Patrick Mahomes would throw more than 2.5 touchdowns, because he had no touchdowns in what was the worst game of his career, statistically. And I believe the first time they lost by double digits in any game that he's been the coach of, or the quarterback of, rather. So, you know, that wasn't great for me. And then, you mentioned it, Tim, on the rushing yards. I had the Tom Brady rushing touchdown. I feel like we were a yard away from him trying that QB sneak into the end zone. I really feel they were like on the 2, and I think if they were on the 1, I kept seeing how he was leaning. I was like, oh, they're going to run. He's leaning back. He's not leaning forward, ready to just dive in. We almost got a big guy touchdown in that sequence, but alas, they never got closer to the end zone, and I did not get my Tom Brady rushing touchdown. So what can you do?
Prop bets, they're fun, they're also hard to win. So Tim did okay, Jace did yeah. And I also did not do very well, but whatever, it's fun, and the NFL season is now over with Tom Brady lifting a Super Bowl trophy and a Super Bowl MVP, because we can't have nice things. All right. Let's I want to say briefly, we will be back next week with another episode. We'll sort of maybe do a Ravens retrospective, NFL retrospective, and then maybe a wish list of things that we want this offseason. And then after that episode, we will start doing our bi-weekly episodes here, as how much Ravens talk can you really have once a week in the offseason. So we will be back next Tuesday, and then after that every other week. I'm going to go through these random Raven clues one more time, and then we're going to get out of here. So with the Super Bowl just being played, I went for a Super Bowl-themed random Raven. And this player played for the team for only one season, the 2000 Super Bowl winning team. He played 9 seasons before that with the New England Patriots and retired after the Ravens 2000-2001 season. He is in the New England Patriots Hall of Fame, as he is a 5-time Pro Bowler and 2-time All-Pro with them. In the Ravens 2000 season, he had 9 catches for 84 yards, despite playing in all 16 games and starting 9 of them. He was a backup for the Ravens and played behind an eventual Hall of Famer. And I'll add this final clue in here that I was saving. When he retired, he was the 4th all-time leading receiver at tight end in NFL history. So that is my random Raven. Tim, I'm trying to stall to see if you need another minute, or should we just go to Jace here?
The only name that I have, and I don't even know if this is this guy's actual name, and I will admit I'm Googling it right now to see if he actually played for New England. So he did, but not, you know, complete wrong time. It's Christian Fourier, but again, he wouldn't be 4th all-time in receptions at tight end. The fact that we had this guy and, I'll say, Shannon Sharp at the tight end position is remarkable. But no, I'm giving this one to Jace. I don't have the slightest clue.
My favorite part, just before Jace says the name here, is that 2000 Ravens, two tight ends starting these games. That was the starting lineup, was trotting out your five linemen, two tight ends, probably a fullback. So I don't even know if there's space for any wide receivers.
Sam Gash, baby, Sam Gash.
Maybe one receiver. My, how the NFL has changed in 20 years.
Can't believe that team couldn't score. The player in question, I believe, is tight end Ben Coates.
That is correct. Ben Coates, five-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro. I had no idea he was that good before the Ravens. I vaguely remembered his name.
Real good in the 90s. The only reason I think I knew him is I watched something about the 2000 Ravens, and I just looked this up to double-check. He actually had multiple receptions in the Super Bowl against the Giants. He had three catches against the Giants, and I believe that's why I was able to pull this name. Ben Coates. I don't have any real memories of him.
This guy made the 1990 All-Decade team.
He was Ben Coates? Good,
this is like, you talk about the mercenary player where it just really, really works out. Having one season left in him after playing, a New England Hall of Fame career, and then just getting the ring and then retiring next season after that. Well done by you, Ben Coates.
I think that's the ultimate, Ben Coates being fourth all time when he retired, the ultimate example of how just the evolution of the tight end, how far we've come from Ben Coates being fourth all time. Certainly a good player in his day, but yeah, I did not expect him to be that high on the all-time list, Anton.
Right, Jace. 499 receptions, 5,555 receiving yards. That put him fourth all time. So, that list has certainly changed and will continue to change over the next 10 years.
I think
plus.
This is like the most flabbergasted Tim's ever been by a random Raven.
I'm flabbergasted. I don't understand this. So, in 1994 he had 96 receptions for over 1,000 yards.
Like, how would that have happened with any tight end?
I don't know if that's... This is bad. This is bad for an audio medium because I literally have nothing to say. I don't know
if that's still the record, but that 94 season, I'm fairly certain Drew Bledsoe set what was, at least at the time, an all-time mark for passing attempts. That was the season he threw. He had a game where he threw 70 passes in a game, which I think is still the NFL record for pass attempts, at least in a regular season game. I guess he threw it to Ben Coates a lot, I guess, is the answer to that.
So that is my random Raven. I hope it wasn't too annoying for my co-hosts and the listener out there. But
I enjoyed that one.
It was incredibly annoying. It was incredibly annoying.
All right, for Jace Evans and Antonio Barbera. No, just kidding. For Tim Horsey and Jace Evans and Antonio Barbera. Thanks for listening to us. Another NFL season in the books. We'll be back next week. It's time to look forward. It's time to look at the Ravens, Super Bowl winners for 2022. Thanks for listening to us. As always, we will see you next week.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.